Hey, I'm Jonathan Miller, and this is the Housing Helix Podcast. I'm a real estate appraiser, analyst, and blogger based in New York who is interested in pretty much anything related to housing with an analytical bent. The Housing Helix is the real estate conversation in long form with information, analysis, and commentary, as well as insights from housing-related experts that have something interesting to share. This episode and the entire podcast library are available as a free subscription through iTunes and at thehousinghelix.com. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, I'm here today with Doug Headings. Doug is the founder of the Headings Property Group, which has offices in Manhattan and Southampton.
Correct.
Newly opened Southampton. I've known Doug for a long time. He's one of the most successful brokers in the New York market. And we have a common bond, and that is that we like to work and sit near toasters. And we can explain that, but it's great to have you with
Thanks, Jonathan.
Just to clarify for people listening to the podcast, and one of the things I wanted to kind of touch on with Doug in this discussion was the issue of square footage, which is something that if you want to get Doug like animated, this is the key thing. But a few years ago, Doug, who has a blog, which we'll touch on, True Gotham, was very passionate about the topic of square footage.
And, I'm still passionate.
And still passionate. And you did a video where you had, I believe, a floor plan draftsman that brokers would hire for a listing, myself as an appraiser, and then you had an architect, right? And you had us measure the apartment and then talk to us about it and do clips of us holding measuring devices and all that. And we did it in your apartment.
Right. And next to the toaster.
And so over my shoulder was Doug's toaster. And so I felt like I was in a, you know, in a highly professional right. setting to convey, you know, my information. But it was a sort of gonzo gorilla, get to the answer kind of stuff that you can do these days.
Right.
So it was fun. Anyway.
And you were very gracious to be willing to sit next to my toaster for my blog video clips.
It was great. Millions of people, you know, see me associated with the toaster.
I don't know about millions, but...
sort of what I wanted to just touch on was sort of your journey, because you've gone through a number of steps to get to this. And we'll cover some of the things along the way. But you know, where I first know you, you were working for, you know, one of the largest full service brokerage companies here in New York. How long were you at? You're at Douglas Elliman.
For 11 years.
11 years.
I was there for 11 years.
And you had a team, right? You're in the West Side office.
Yes, I was. I did have a team. I was. I at the time I only had originally I had one member of the team. It was me and an assistant,
right.
And then I finally got the courage to hire another person, and then before I left, it was me and three other people.
And
so it was never a massive team like Jackie right. Toplitzky or anyone like that.
Right, right. And then at some point you decided that you needed a change in scenery. I guess.
Yeah, you know, I've always had entrepreneurial drive.
Right.
I never enjoyed working for the big man, you know.
Right.
And I will tell you, for 5 years, I stayed at Elliman purely out of fear because I really thought that brand for me was everything. And I thought it was everything to my clients. And ultimately, when I left and I asked my clients, or rather I told my clients I was leaving, they all said, well, we didn't hire them.
Right.
We hired you, and we want to go wherever you're going. We don't care where that is. So to kind of allay some of that fear, I made the step to Charles Ruttenberg, which...
Paul Purcell and Kathy Braddock.
Exactly, who I had worked with in my early days at Elliman.
Right.
They got wind that I was thinking about leaving Elliman to go out on my own. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse to come to Ruttenberg, and I thought, why not give it a shot? This is kind of a step in the right direction to true autonomy.
Right.
And I went there. I was there for a year, and basically the Ruttenberg model, which is fantastic for some, is not really conducive to building a business within their business.
Like a team.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. So I really wanted to build, I wanted my own animal to unleash.
For the layman, like when I think of, you know, large company, you know, the traditional role model, the traditional business model is, you know, percent commission split sort of, you know, on sale, gross commission.
Sure.
Ruttenberg is more like Remax, I think, where you pay like a desk fee or an administrative fee.
Correct.
Like a flat fee.
Yeah, you pay $99 a month.
Right.
To Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Right.
And then you pay a transaction fee. And here in Manhattan, any transaction below $1.5 million, you pay a $1,000 fee.
Right.
And anything above $1.5 million with no ceiling, you pay a $2,000 fee.
I see.
So, you know, the numbers work in an independent broker's favor if they're sophisticated enough to run their own business.
Right.
And not really need the brand or the support that you may think you're going to get at a right. traditional firm.
Right.
It's a great model. And the reason Ruttenberg has grown in such leaps and bounds in the last few years is because it is a good model. And it does appeal to a lot of agents who you know, look in the mirror and they're like, why am I giving, you know, half of my commission to this right. big firm? You know, in this day and age of advanced technology, where most of the technology that's available to the large firms is available to the small firms.
Right.
And there's even technology out there that's available to me because I'll use it.
Right.
That isn't available to the big firms because there's so much bureaucracy for them to go through.
Right.
Listing syndication is a perfect example. People have been syndicating listing information in this country for years. This right. isn't a novel idea.
Right.
But it is in Manhattan.
Right.
In Manhattan, when I went to Element and said, look at this, we can put our listings everywhere. They said, well, we don't want our listings there.
Right.
This is our information. We have to, you know, and look, that philosophy works. There's a reason they have market share.
Right.
You know, that traditional model has worked for a long, long time. It will continue to work. There's no doubt in my mind.
Well, I think, too, you know, what you do see, you know, I often say that the credit boom that we just went through, there was also a dot-com boom in real estate. So that was where you had the Foxtons and
right.
the Zillows and Trulia and all the different sort of, you know, online, you know, experience for, you know, touching on different aspects of the real estate transaction. You know, because during the boom, if you had a pulse, many brokers who just had a pulse could sell a lot of property.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because they were order takers.
Right.
Right? As
right.
opposed to...
pick any number,
selling, right?
Pick any number out of the sky, and it'll sell for
right.
something.
And so, what my observation is that when the market weakens and there's a lot of uncertainty, you have less bravado on the seller side. You're worried about trying new ways, and you know, sort of the, you know, the Redfin and all. There's all kinds of different things. Coupled with that, Manhattan is probably 20 years behind many other housing markets in terms of just the way business is done.
Sure.
It's a tough market to do business.
It is.
But the rewards, you know, I mean, because the price points here and, you know, the wealth that's here, there's tremendous upside as well.
Absolutely.
So you get the good with the bad. But in this market, I think that you're probably seeing some retrenchment or some... I'm guessing market share has been gained by the big firms, the full service firms, that everybody that was saying it's over during the boom times, now that doesn't really work. I think from an argument standpoint, or not from an argument, to argue the point what you're seeing and or what you've seen firsthand, is that there's always a place for alternatives from the key model. And I think that that's kind of what you've discovered.
Absolutely.
Not to put words in your mouth. But you're there for a year. What sort of triggered the idea of going off? And, well, when you were there, did you have a team?
I did.
Okay.
I did. When I started at Ruttenberg, when I left Element, I brought four people with me. I brought my assistant at the time, Jennifer Brew, I brought someone who was an intern for me while she was at college to be kind of an administrative assistant. And Sandra and David Innocenzi were the first two who had faith in my business model and were willing to take the leap with me.
Right.
And they are probably the biggest trumpeters of our business model and the reason that we've grown from 4 people to 14 people in the last year.
Wow.
So
I didn't realize that you had that many.
Yeah, we have 14 and we're hoping to hire another. And let me tell you, Jonathan, if I wanted to, I could have an office full of 50 people.
Really?
That's how many people I'm turning away. Because
why?
Because my business model, we have a profit sharing part of our business model where every single agent that works for the Headings Property Group is compensated for every transaction that the company does.
I see.
No matter where it originates. And that's that collaborative team piece of our business plan that kind of gets lost if you get more than 12, 13, 14 people. It's very hard to collaborate and work together as a team.
Right.
So unlike some of the bigger firms where they may have 500, 700, 1,000 agents in an office, I have no intentions of ever doing that.
Right.
I would like to have 10 offices in the city with 10 to 12 people in each office.
I see.
And these aren't retail spaces because it's all about keeping the bottom line low.
Right.
You know, I'm not, you know.
Austerity.
Yeah, I don't need big storefronts because I don't see how that helps my client. That big storefront is not what's selling their property. What's selling the property is the marketing inside the storefront.
Right.
And I can spend a lot more money. I can spend a lot more of those commission dollars on actually marketing property. And I can spread it to the team in a profit-sharing model that really aligns everybody's interest with that of my consumer or the client.
Everybody's got the same goal.
Yeah.
Do you, you touched on this. You have like small and big, and the economies of scale and everything gets screwed up in the middle. And it's always dangerous to sort of be in the middle because when you're in the middle, you're really in transition. You're either shrinking or growing.
Right.
You know, there's no, you know, what do they say, grow or die?
Right.
And but your approach is to by growing, then you sort of spread out. So you have clusters of people that are at optimum size
rather than
just having one big office.
Well, and that's, I mean, look, we've maxed out the number of people we can have in our first Manhattan office. Our goal was to open a downtown office right around now, and an opportunity presented itself in the Hamptons that I couldn't turn down.
Right.
So I turned on a dime, which you can do as a boutique firm.
Sure.
And I opened a Hamptons office and put the downtown office on hold. I don't want to expand too quickly.
Right.
That's the last thing I want to do. So I'm trying to do this slow and steady, and it's already going quicker than I had thought it would go.
Right.
So it freaks
good
me
idea,
out a little bit.
Good ideas tend to do that, though. But that's so not to suck up to you too much, but how does it feel now, you know, as an entrepreneur? I mean, not that a broker isn't an entrepreneur, but it's a different type of entrepreneurialism. You're basically expanding beyond sort of a team and running a company.
Well, I'll tell you, the
is
best
it the same or the, different?
No, it's very different. It's okay. Very different. And I had no idea how different it was until I left Ruttenberg and actually really went out on my own. You know, Kathy Braddock and Paul Purcell, when I was at Ruttenberg, right after I left, they were constantly asked the question, well, why did he defect? You know, why isn't he interested in your model anymore? Your model must not be worth anything. And that was absolutely not the case.
Right.
That model is suited for a certain type of broker. And Kathy used to say to the press who would ask her that question, not everyone has the entrepreneurial spirit to go out and take on all the responsibility of a company. And there's exponentially more responsibility of running a company than there is just being an agent with a team.
Right.
Huge amounts of responsibility and expenses.
Right.
So all of that kind of compounds the experience. For me, it makes the experience more exciting.
Right.
You know, I get off on that. I like the fact that, you know, it was one thing when I was a real estate agent and I would say no 2 days were ever the same. that couldn't be more true now.
It's more like no 2 hours of the
same. Yeah, I mean, it's really, I mean, you know, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane.
But that's part of the juice, you know, that's part of the thrill. And what I always remember, especially during tough economic periods or periods where, you know, you're really challenged trying to keep staff and, you know, trying to, you know, when things just dry up, is the buck stops with you.
Yeah.
You know, like that there is no shoulder to cry on. That's it.
That's right. That's
you
know,
you have to handle it.
The good news is when I was at Element, I was never a complainer. I wasn't the squeaky wheel that was always in the manager's office.
Right.
And I don't have a lot of tolerance for that.
Right.
So a perfect example of I'm very careful about who I hire.
Right.
I had two desks to fill, the final two desks in my West Side office, and I interviewed 75 people.
Wow.
Before I filled those two desks.
Right. Did you have a...
And I think I did a good job.
Whining 101 right. sort of test.
Exactly. Exactly. No, you get us. I mean, you hire people, you get a sense right away.
Yes.
You know, when somebody sits down with me and says, now, what are you going to do for me?
Right.
Goodbye.
Right.
You know?
Right.
This is a mutually beneficial arrangement here.
Not a
what are we going to do for each other?
Right.
You know, how are we going to make this work together?
Right.
You know, and we have a real team. So it's important that the chemistry that exists on the team gels properly.
Right. Right. Know? And also that management follows through on edicts or policy or rules so that everybody feels like sort of like the credit crisis. You know, there was no oversight.
Right.
So it just it evolved to chaos, you know, and I think that can happen in a business very, very rapidly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or become embedded in the culture. Just as an aside, you were like me sort of caught up in, I always see us as sort of the early guard of the blogosphere in New York. True Gotham was, you know, one of the early.
It was the first broker blog.
Okay, first
real estate broker blog.
Right. Well, okay, so I was the first real estate appraiser.
Right, exactly. Blog, right? Exactly.
But the thing that I didn't do, because I didn't have the foresight, was to plaster my blog's logo all over a car. So tell me about that.
That was an interesting experiment. We basically had the car wrapped in an advertisement for the blog.
Right.
And it had TrueGotham.com all over it and big red letters and gothic-looking New York scenery landscape in the background. And it said dispatches from the front lines of Manhattan real estate. And I tell you,
I
probably...
Mini Cooper?
It was a Mini Cooper. Yeah. And I drove it maybe... First of all, my kids at the time were 5 and 2.
Right.
They wanted to drive it all the time. And I got the car as kind of advertisement for the blog to drive traffic to the blog and hopefully drive traffic to me.
No pun intended.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I ended up having Jennifer drove the car for 3 years.
Really?
It was basically her car.
Wow.
And she drove it. And whenever I drove it, you know, it was funny. It appealed to the, like, 11 to 14-year-old sect.
Right.
They loved that car. I don't think anyone else saw it.
Right.
So it wasn't incredibly effective, but it was fun.
But you got to try.
Sure.
I actually, twice when I was on the West Side, I saw it parked once. And I saw it being driven. And I remember... it was like, I don't think I had met you personally at that point. I think I was coming to speak and, you made some comment like, you were waiting for the lease to expire the car and like there like someone had just like dinged it or something.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, that is overhead. That's a hassle.
Right. Exactly. It was a bit of a hassle, but I let her have, I paid for the car.
Right.
It was her car. She had to park it. I didn't have to deal with any of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but it was, you know, it was a fun experiment. We parked it outside of Inman's Real Estate Connect 2 years in a row.
Right.
And gave away, you know, we had some giveaways and people would stop by and see the car.
Right.
But it, you know.
But what happened? Like you got busy, right? And you, I remember you saying in your blog, you couldn't commit the same time because you were posting volume like like I was posting.
Yeah, daily.
Daily, you know, and they were thought provoking. They weren't just like, here's a picture of me on television right. or whatever. And they were thought provoking, and you know, that's hard.
It is.
To do. And because it's also your brand. You know, like if you put some stupid, silly thing on the blog, you sort of put a chink in your armor of credibility. And so you made that conscious decision, didn't you? Was there a point where you said, hey, I got to cut back on this?
Well, it wasn't. It kind of happened. And I'll tell you, there were a couple of elements that went into the lack of posting. And I would say probably the greatest resistance I had to posting was that I didn't have anything positive to say. I really didn't.
Yeah,
and
that was a challenging period.
And as somebody who's coming into the market with a new company, I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Coming in with a new company and my lifeline is real estate, I had a whole new appreciation and respect for the top brass at a company like Elliman.
Who
don't want somebody like me writing on their blog how much the market sucks.
Right.
You know, now I wouldn't come, but I drew the line at coming out and saying, now's the time to buy.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to do that either.
It's always a good time to buy.
Yeah, right, exactly. Says you. So it's, it was challenging. It was,
right.
And I think I even posted a few times, you know, I think I even wrote a blog post that said, it's not that I don't have the time, I just don't have anything good to say right now.
Right.
I'm deflated.
Right.
I'm depressed. This market is sickening me.
Right.
You know, and my blog is very transparent.
Right.
And I couldn't do that on a daily basis.
Right.
And expect people to call me and say, hey, I'm ready to buy. You know? So, because some people, it is the right time to buy in
Absolutely.
Any market.
Absolutely.
So, but if they read that blog post and maybe it is the right
it's
time,
never
to buy,
the right
then
time,
it's
right.
not the right time.
Right.
You know, so every single person's situation is unique.
Right.
I'm still a big fan of blogging about the fact that there's no national housing market. You know, that's been
my favorite slogan.
Oh, it's unbelievable. That's been blogged to death, but people still don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, people read an article about the national housing market.
Right. Existing home sales.
And why isn't my place sold?
Right.
You know?
Right. And they're missing the, not only the national to local, but they're missing the reason why the number dipped or spiked.
Right, exactly.
The whole story behind it, because usually the press release headline doesn't match the content.
Yeah, exactly,
substance.
Exactly.
And
most people don't read past the headline in the first paragraph.
Exactly.
Right.
Maybe the second paragraph if you're lucky.
Right, exactly.
And that's part of the problem. You know, I completely agree, and I have to check myself too, because it is really easy to just go negative 100%.
Sure.
Because first of all, you're sort of like, you know, when you're blogging or writing a paper or an article, you're sort of putting your thoughts out there and sorting them and seeing how it feels. When the market isn't good, you know, when it goes through a tough period, that's what you have to work with.
Right.
I
right.
mean,
you know, sure.
It, and that's why sales drop in a
right.
weak market.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey,
exactly.
Gee, do the math. Hey, that
right.
makes sense.
Right.
Interesting. So, you know, when I just to sort of step aside from the blog stuff for a second, when I think about covering, now you've got, you know, 14 people, you've got Hamptons, New York. Do you sell anymore?
I do.
So how does that work?
Well, that's why I'm taking you to a football game in a couple of weeks, so that I can figure out how to juggle all these things.
Because I speak the same. I come from the same spot.
Yeah. Do you appraise anymore?
Yeah,
and you
of course
do.
I do. Yeah.
And you do. Well, first of all, I like selling.
Yeah.
I got into residential real estate because of the psychological and emotional element of residential real estate. I'm not a fan. I could never be in the commercial real estate market. It's just a raw numbers game, and it's not for me. Right. I like the fact that people, quote unquote, fall in love with an apartment when they walk into it, or you're helping them to let go of a place that they've built a lifetime of memories, you know, something like that. So it's that gets me juiced.
Right.
So I'm not ready to give that up yet. And frankly, a lot of my sphere of influence, you know, my friends, my family, my previous colleagues, I've been doing this almost 20 years. When they call, I mean, I just met with somebody last week who said, well, this is great. Congratulations on your new company, but you're going to be the one working with us, right?
Right. I get the same thing.
And I said, here's the way it's going to work. Okay.
I'm taking notes, by the way.
I am the quarterback of my team. I will quarterback the marketing strategy. I will certainly handle all the negotiations. Any questions about the property come directly to me. All of the important aspects of the sale of this apartment come to me. If you really, really want me to spend my time in unlocking the door and letting people walk around your apartment, I will do that too. But that's not the best use of my time.
Right.
And it's been very effective so far. I haven't had anyone say, well, we can't work with you personally, because they do work with me personally.
Right.
And when they're communicating with other members of the team, there's not an email that goes out that I'm not CC'd on.
Right.
So I always know what's going on. And if something goes out that I catch, I'll chime in and say, well, why don't we try this?
Right.
And they appreciate that because they know I'm watching out for them.
Right.
You know, I'm their advocate. So far it's worked really well.
Right. That parallels the situation I go into where they you know, the person that recommended us said, you've got to ask John, you know, Jonathan's had to be the appraiser, but the average age or experience level of my staff is about 14 years.
Right.
So my sister runs the day to day.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're all connected.
Sure.
And all that sort of thing. So it is a challenge because you can't do everything for everybody.
Right.
But you can still give the same level of service.
Right. So
that's the challenge.
Well, you know, it's funny, as you're saying that out loud, I recall when my wife worked at Martha Stewart, I would get so aggravated my wife basically published the entire hors d'oeuvre book. It was like
really?
A 450-page book. She came up with the majority of the recipes, and then Martha put her name on it.
Right.
The people who are in the press and on the front lines are just the voice of the company.
Right.
It doesn't mean that there aren't some incredible people in my office
right.
who are capable professionals who could maybe probably do a better job than I could. You know, in fact, I can think of at least four who in the loft market, I've got somebody who's much better than I am.
Right.
You know, in the first time home buyer, I have somebody who's infinitely more patient than I am.
Right.
You know, so there's people think that I'm the reason for the success. It's not me. It's
right.
the people that I've been lucky enough to have come work with me. That's where the success comes. So it's been I've been just very fortunate.
Well, they say, you know, there's no I in team, right?
Right, exactly.
But there is an I in appraiser. So
I
have to figure, I have to do the math.
Right,
time.
Right.
Well, listen.
There's an I in commission, too.
Yes, there's actually, is there? Yeah, there's just one, right? Just
no,
one
two.
Eye.
There are two I's.
Yeah, yeah. I've never paid a commission, so I have no idea how to spell it. But, Doug, this has really been fun.
Yeah.
I really have enjoyed you taking the time to chat. You really, you've got a lot on your plate.
I
but
do.
You seem remarkably relaxed. Must be the toast or the toaster.
It's those spine injections I had right before I came here.
Yes. Understood.
Right.
But thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of the Housing Helix podcast. As always, you can send comments and recommend guests to my email address, jmiller@millersamuel.com. This episode and the entire podcast library are available as a free subscription through iTunes and at thehousinghelix.com. So until next time. I'm Jonathan Miller, and thanks for listening to the Housing Helix Podcast.